Wish I could. I always wanted to play a stringed instrument, but
you should do it. It's fun. I was surprised I was much better at bass than... Hi, guys! Hey!
Hey!
Than I thought I would be. I was like, yeah. I wouldn't say like seals with balls, but I was really good. For somebody who's never played before.
I can fake it. But if you want actual notes being played that fit the music, then that's a whole different story.
Yeah, I'm going to try it. It's fun.
Anyway, so I keep seeing these little posts from Chief Learning Officer Magazine, Trainee Magazine, around data analytics. And I'm thinking, okay, is this just relabeling something that's been around forever? So I thought that we might talk today about not only importance of, you know, tracking training data, but are companies doing anything differently today than, say, 4 or 5 years ago? So let's start with...
I hope so.
Well, yeah. So my observation of historical tracking, you know, way back to, let's say, the early days of LMSs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole reason those things came into play, they were an extension of... student administration system or corporate universities that used to track classrooms and classroom attendance and post evaluations. And so once they started moving that content online, that was the beginning stages of the learning management system. Well, it used to be a course management system. So this is precursor to LMS, course management system. So I'm Skillsoft and you buy my courses and I can track you took those courses. I'm CBT Systems or CBT Learning, whatever it used to be called. You track
all the Oh, right, CBT, computer-based training. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm Smart. Oh, what was the other one? Smart something that grew into another company. So all these companies that first started to build online or CD-based training, right, were tracking
that would
their
be
own.
Compact disc.
Here's right back when, boys and girls.
I know. I was like, I wanted to do the harpy sound that takes you back in time.
Yeah, what was that cartoon that Aesop's Fables, he'd go back in time, the professor or whatever. Anyway, now we're really going back.
I'm just getting lost.
So anyway, then someone had the bright idea of, well, gee, I want this company's courses and this company's courses. I want my own courses. How do I track all that stuff? Plus any traditional instructor-led or certification or customer training. And so that these things grew and grew and grew, but they were still not tracking what I think was the real important stuff. Is somebody learning something? Or not only is it learning, but they're calling a level 4 or 3 or 4 from Kirkpatrick's model of, did the knowledge transfer demonstrate itself on the job?
Right, which is a great question to ask, but if you didn't build the training to have that happen, then asking
exactly.
that question is kind of cruel.
Yes.
And haphazard.
Yes. Well, so why did it not turn into that? So, okay. It's just like the government. You know, you build this engine that everybody's protecting themselves with. You know, I'm going to protect my constituents. I'm going to protect the people that I get money from that help me win elections. I'm going to get this to this, just like in corporate. I'm going to say, oh, I get a budget of X, and I'm going to train 10,000 people on this budget, and then I have to report back how many people went through the training from this year to last year, or what percentage of completions, or, you know, whatever that metric is. You know, people kind of by design choose the metrics, so to speak. Versus, I think, which is really more important, is did we sell more stuff? Did we cut, you know, so somebody's measuring that in sales, but there's a disconnect between
what training did they take and when do we start doing that? Well, I mean, it's also that determination of what is the causality of the selling more stuff.
Mm-hmm. Is it just so the market's better.
Right.
We had pretty brochures. Our website was updated, and then the marketing people are going to take credit for that.
Right. Well,
you know,
it's all umbrellas, and it's been a lot rainier, then maybe that's a good, you know, it just, there's
right.
a lot of things.
And granted, there are things that multi-point actions that do impact it versus one single trigger. So I think where they're finally recognizing this is this whole kind of data. So I signed up for this report. I haven't gotten it yet, which I'm a little surprised by. It says, why data analysts are vital to corporate learning and development. So I did this, I filled this out 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I still have not, oh, here it is. Download now. And it did download.
Hey,
Xerox, your document didn't download. I think you have ways to fix that.
Right?
Call me crazy.
Don't get me started. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but boy, do I want to.
So I think what they're realizing now is, oh, if we saw patterns or if we saw, you know, because why would data analysts, I mean, again, or data scientists, I love that. They're just like, oh, we are using data science now to analyze. I'm just like, what is that? Where did that all of a sudden become a popular term?
Who came up with that new word?
Somebody
yeah.
that wanted to be paid more for their role, maybe. I don't know. But anyway,
yes.
So it's basically, okay, so that does that mean you're now measuring things in a more holistic way? Are you letting somebody outside of training or outside of marketing, outside of sales, that doesn't have any relationship to the outcome of this directly, as far as I'm going to lose budget or I'm not going to get staffed or we're going to drop a certain, you know, product group, whatever. You know, are you going to let somebody measure from a holistic standpoint the impact of learning and development?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I was hoping this report would tell me, but I don't have it. So the other
psych.
It's like, dang it. So the other thing I was kind of curious about, too, is there's been a lot of buzz last, more so this year than last year, on what they call XAPI. Little X API, and it's really tin can. So tin can's been around for a while, but do you know what tin can or X API is?
Are you asking me that question?
Yes, yes.
API.
No, the guy in the red shirt.
I'm wearing the crazy Bob Barker costume. right? All of a sudden we went to Price is Right. Sorry.
Yeah. Wait, let me get my extremely long, skinny microphone out.
API,
still use.
Application
yes.
Programming Interface, API.
Yeah.
Aside from things I keep beans in.
That's, well, API, when I hear XAPI, exactly what you described is what I think it should
right.
be.
Is that not it at all?
Well, I don't know who wrote this Wikipedia page. I'm sure there's a way to find out. But it has experience API, parentheses, tin can API. So I think what API actually still means is true to this statement, but they're saying experience. So the X API is the experience word. They're just shortening it as X versus fill in the blank with whatever you want, API / tin can. So why don't they just say tin can? I'm just a little
right.
puzzled by that. So basically, and this is why, when we started to launch our call center simulator, people
uh-huh.
were pushing back to say, gee, you know, why can't we just track the results in our LMS? And I said, well, what does is it a SCORM-based LMS? And they're like, yes, of course it is. I said, well, you're going to be able to measure they started the course, they completed the course, based upon either each screen being looked at or they got a certain score on a test or an assessment and that's what you were looking for to count as complete, but that's it. You don't know how long they were on from one screen to the next. You don't know if they said the right response as a call center agent at every interval that you want to be measured. You don't know if they clicked three times on the wrong thing. I mean, there's Captivate, you might be able to do a little of that, but you cannot do both verbal responses and screen interactions, what they call haptic. And so what I'm glad to see is that this tin can, and, you know, because learning's evolved, we're you know, it used to be this whole SCORMI, shareable content object reference models, what that stands for, was always the kind of the default. But now, with this new API or tin can, the reasons it's really being pushed is learning, e-learning is going outside the web browser. E-learning might be on mobile devices, more control over the learning content, solid security use, using, I'm sure they mean there's more, if you want to use security, it allows for that, platform transition, meaning you start it on your, then you move over to your mobile device and back to your laptop again. Ability to track games and simulations, ability to track real-world performance, which is always something we've talked about, team-based e-learning, tracking learning plans and goals. So what they're saying is basically there's a great deal of flexibility in using this type of tracking experience. So I wouldn't say that I would say potentially we could incorporate Tin Can into what we're calling ACES, our call center simulator, if it still allows us to track at the granular level that we are tracking in our system, so that, yeah, I understand why a company wouldn't want to have two different tracking systems. I mean, for us, we don't charge you anymore. I mean, it comes with the price of the licensing, so it's not like you're paying an additional price to have that feature in there. So I'm glad to see that this is becoming a trend, that people are starting to push for this. I don't know what the impact is to this on people that have a lot of third-party software that's only SCORM-based.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at our large client that we've done a lot of healthcare compliance training.
Absolutely.
For. You know, yeah. Does that mean we should go back and republish all that stuff for Tin Can as well as SCORM and all that good stuff? Or I don't know.
Seems like there needs to be a tool that would allow those things to bridge.
Well, you can now, like Storyline, Captivate, Captivate. I'm not sure about Camtasia. It does give you the Tin Can option.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're still
but
hosting
I'm talking
two
about
versions
actually
of.
Like a middleware that translates it into whatever, you know, like a school bridge. Oh, that's what it should be called.
What? Maybe I'm going to look that up right now. Maybe somebody has.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll think of the, what's the school bridge project? No, that's literally school bridge. You think of all the Flash content that was out there for years and years and years and still is for
yep.
training. I don't know. Every time I've seen Tin Can, it's really referenced to HTML5. So I think you'd have to have some way of converting that Flash to MP4 or something like that. But then it wouldn't be interactive. So I guess it'd have to be HTML5.
Absolutely.
Well,
that's the direction.
So, you know, so that's just one component, though. That tracking your training or allowing to track multiple things in training is just one piece of it. So I'd be really curious to see if somebody has taken a course that was SCORM only trackable, basically republished it as Tin Can, but are they changing any of the metrics that they're looking for now from the user's interaction with it? And I don't know if they're thinking of it like that.
I don't. Yeah, I was quiet because I was like, I don't know.
I don't know if there is. I'm just posing the question for anybody listening out there. If
it
you are
know.
Doing this, do you know what you can track with Tin Can, or do you know how to build your content differently so that you can track different behaviors and different interactions? So, you know, I don't know the answer to that either, because I'm sure we're going to be faced with that with some of our customer projects. So, you know, it's something I need to look into myself to say, okay, well, yeah, if I am publishing tin can beyond bookmarking and logging in and logging out and completions, what will it track or what can I make it track?
Mm-hmm.
So let's get past that. So let's say you are now measuring different things. It would be very interesting for them now to start to say, oh, so now they're able to track this, this, and this now instead of just A and B. Are we observing their behaviors differently in the workforce differently than when we were only able to track A and B? So that it starts to have an implication of real performance, real world performance that you're monitoring that you weren't really thinking about before. Or you weren't thinking about building that into the training because you knew you couldn't track it in the training. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It reminds me of a statement that I used to keep on my desk that had to do with the essence of it was the more you look into a problem, the less you know about it, but you have better questions to ask. And especially when it's a particularly challenging one and a sticky one. I think that sometimes having the ability to track something doesn't always mean that that's what we need to be tracking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's an elegance to finding really key, I mean, it's a phrase that gets used an awful lot, key performance indicators that really are key performance indicators that really, if we track this, then we take care of all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got to test it and see. I mean, I think the thing that's important for any of this stuff is to realize that this is an experimentation game. And I know nobody in reporting wants to hear about things being experiment. They want it cut and dried, black and white. I can track this. I can follow up with behavior. I can fire people. I can hire people. I can promote people based on this information. And sometimes you just really have to do an experimentation to see and refine as over time so that you're really tracking the right thing. And then as tools change, incorporating those when it makes sense.
Well, if you have the luxury, you could do that, say, in a small subset. You know, don't do it
absolutely.
On everybody. Just pick a small subset.
A sample.
Yeah, a sample group and go from there. Because I'm working with a really large company right now, and just to even get a server to host an application, months and months and months and months of paperwork, approvals, requisitions, you know, so I could see where there are, as much as they want to, sometimes they've got these such huge hurdles to jump over, just get the tools that they need to make that happen.
Right.
And so it's really hard for them to make any kind of decisions on what to do, especially on a larger scale. You know, so I feel for them. I do empathize with them just because, you know, I've been working as a small business for years and years. If we want to change something, we change it with the snap of a finger.
<You
know? laughs> So we're a little spoiled in that regard. So I think that's part of the challenge of these rollouts of training or tracking of training, because the more you're tracking, the more work that's involved, the more work that's involved, the more resources you need, and on and on and on and on.
Right.
So there's a way to automate that, or that technology will allow you to measure more things in an automated way. So, for example, we're now getting a lot of requests for taking recorded audio content from a call center and just transcribing it automatically. So, you know, that technology wasn't really reliable 5 years ago. I mean, you could do it, but the output was really hard to kind of make heads or tails out of.
Mm-hmm.
And so now some of that will allow you to then look for patterns, get data analytics around the transcriptions, and then what do you want to do with it? So and then we've got other software that we're being asked to measure the emotion analytics in someone's voice. So again, it's automatic. Technology is allowing that to be automatic with thousands and thousands and thousands of minutes. So I think part of it is technology's making it easier, more cost effective. Back to your question, just because you can measure it, is that what you should be measuring?
I already know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
You know, it's a resounding no, please. I mean, I want to make this obvious. I mean, really, let's, because I mean, I guess I'm looking at it, you know, everybody should know my background is in IT, my background is working on servers, my background is doing continuous improvement and a bunch of things prior to now. And I mean, you can just go insane with alerts and thresholds, and it just, it can get boggling. And of course, now the technology is such that you can track every hiccup. And then, of course, there's so many things you have to track that are important. But it just can be overwhelming, the amount of data with which to search, and then trying to identify what's really important.
Right.
So that you can tune out all of that background noise and really only look at those things. And I know we can relate that to email and to our lives and to our schedules and all of the things that are important versus things that aren't, that are just noise that bite at you that really aren't important in your life. I feel like I'm in Stephen Covey land all of a sudden, and I'm seeing the four quadrants, you know, what's important and what's urgent and all
or
that.
Or the why.
But, but really, figuring out, I think it is an art to the science of figuring out what for your company. I mean, certainly look at other people and see what they've done. Good Lord, start somewhere. Don't just start looking at this giant pile of data. But what's important and how can we track that? And, you know, what does this mean for us? And is our training working? You know, that's ultimately, and what are we saying? What would make our training, what would be an indicator of our training working? Is it selling more units? Is it having better customer service scores? Whatever it is important to you as a company and as, you know, an employer.
So, and I know it's hard. People aren't intentionally sabotaging, or hopefully not. I mean, they really want to know if something's working or not. And if not, you know, how to fix it. So hopefully you've got a culture in place that is allowing for people to not be afraid to let something show up that's negative in nature so that they can make a change to help improve the impact of whatever's going on. And it's tough. I mean, I know when the economy was really bad and people were, unemployment was up, I'm sure there was a lot of people that just want to keep their job, keep their heads down.
Right.
You know, I can't imagine, you know, if your livelihood depended upon some kind of data coming out that always showed an improvement. And that's one thing I hated about when I worked for a public company is a quarterly report, the quarterly sales report. You know, it's like, you know, we must see an improvement. It's like the world does not operate in quarters. And now, and
how well did that go over?
Well, they didn't like it, but. Plus, so many companies now don't operate on the same calendar year either. So it's like, how do you explain that? You know, if I'm Oracle and we're having a good year, but our fiscal year ends June, but I'm, U.S. government, and my fiscal year starts in September, you know, there's all these things. So you can't, it's like, okay, so you can't think that the whole world and the economy is going to be up and down at the same time. I guess is what I'm saying.
Right.
So anyway, that would have brought everyone down, completely depressed them all.
It's so sad. I'm just sitting here going, help me think of something positive.
But the good news is it is cheaper. I think it's cheaper to run these analyses. You can do it faster so that you can make quicker decisions, better business decisions quicker, as long as you've got the systems in place that are measuring the right thing. So that is the good news. You know, I recently was working with companies that were using Salesforce.com for some stuff. And again, you think of all the, if people are using it. So that's, technology always goes back to, are people putting the data in to begin with? So if you think of CRMs, the adoption rate of that is still not where it needs to be. And so if you got to get human behavior involved, so that's one battle. Then the other battle is making sure that it's set up to have the data flow the right way and collect the right things at the right time. So, and that's like a whole nother topic of discussion. But I think we've kind of beat this subject to death a little bit. So for our listeners out there, I'd be curious, you know, are you calling people data analysts, data scientists, knowledge management experts? Because knowledge management, you know, was a very popular term. Is that still around? You know, do people still use that terminology? Because are they the same thing? Or are they still different roles? I almost think they're different roles. Because one's analyzing stuff versus the other one kind of deciding where it goes. all right. So on that note, I think we need to say goodbye to our audience.
I think they're crying now. I think
like, all right. Well, we'll leave that food for thought and discuss it another time. All right.
Okay.
Well, thanks, everybody, for joining Training Tech Talk, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.